Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Time and Room Podcast, our new podcast all about lacrosse, featuring my buddy Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. and NBC Sports Washington, and I love lacrosse. Of course, Dane grew up in Ohio. He played at Robert Morris, was a two-time captain there. He coached at the D3, D1 level, and he is now the head coach at St. Andrew's in Potomac. Coach Dane Smith, how you doing, buddy?
Happy to be back.
Yeah, we're
I don't
back.
Even know what day it is right now. Is it Monday, Tuesday?
I think it's Monday.
Yeah, it's all the days are starting to blur together, but I'm glad we're able to connect for sure.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. Of course, today we have a special guest, former University of Delaware captain and current NLL stud Brett Manny. Will be joining us. Now, Brett is a cyborg. I don't know him the way you know him. I've only seen him.
I knew
him.
That was going to be the first thing you said.
He's just kind of like this real-life, longer-haired version of Drago, yeah. If you've ever seen that Rocky movie. I can't remember. Was that Rocky 2, Rocky, whatever it was.
He's a big man. He's a horse, that's for
oh,
sure.
Oh, my God. I remember seeing him at that NXT showcase.
I know. I thought I had to get you away from him. I didn't know what you were going to do.
The guy's dreamy.
Yeah, he's a big dude. Tall drink of water, for sure. But he's a great guy. We've gotten to know him in a number of different ways, and he actually, my assistant Coach Petrosky, worked for his company NXT up in Philly, and
right.
Before that, I ran some recruiting events as a college coach with NXT, which is the organization he works for, and couldn't be a nicer guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy,
and he's a big dude,
and he's a box lacrosse stud in the NLL. He also played with Team USA, their indoor team. And, of course, as you mentioned, he's played it, you've probably seen him if you're in the lacrosse world at a variety of different tournaments or showcases. He's currently the VP of event sales and recruiting for NXT Lacrosse. So we're going to talk to Brett in just a little bit. But first, I want to just touch base, see what's going on in the world of lax. I know you had a big phone call recently with a bunch of the high school coaches. How did that go?
It was good. I think it's worth talking about just because it's good to, man, it was good to see everybody and see, you know, what everyone's thinking in this area. Obviously, we're lucky we have some of the best high school coaches in the country, you know, right,
oh, yeah.
Right in the DMV area. So everyone's hurt, you know, that's for sure. That was the obvious thing. Everyone wants their season back. Everyone wants their seniors to be able to be sent out the right way. And so, you know, we're all brainstorming, trying to figure out what's the best thing to do. But
who like were some anything. Of the guys on the call? Like, Blestry?
I mean, obviously everyone, you know, Casey O'Neill and Jeff Blestry and those guys. Obviously anyone in the WCAC and the IAC, we all have, it's called the Potomac chapter. So it's the independent schools in the MAC, the WCAC and the IAC. So all the head coaches were really on it. Coach Morrison from DeMatha. I mean, they're all everyone's invested. Everyone wants to make something work, but you know, like anything, we're like, that sounds like a great idea. And then we're like, wait a second. When can we make a decision if we can do that? And it's, well, maybe never, or maybe in a month from now or whatever.
Right. And so a lot of it, I mean, I don't know how many of the details you want to go into here, but a lot of it is kind of something that you're trying to brainstorm for the guys, right? To get specifically, I know a lot of the coaches out there really feel bad for the seniors, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think you got to start with the seniors. You feel terrible for them. You know, me having a younger team, I'm a coach. It's like, well, I feel bad for my seniors. Definitely. I also want to develop my younger kids. I want to get my 21 seen. I mean, there's a checklist of things that hopefully you can accomplish in one event or one tournament or one league or whatever it is. So, yeah, we're all trying to figure a way to send them out. And it's, you know, it's like a 1 year, it's a 1 year stop. It's like a, it's just a gap year where like, we're going to do this one thing potentially for high school kids this summer, because this is all assuming club doesn't happen. That's why I want to get Brett on here, Brett Manny on, and be like,
right,
what is NXT doing? Cause they're one of the largest, you know, event coordinators really up and down the East Coast for lacrosse stuff. So what are they going to do? If club doesn't go on, we got to do something. We got to offer our kids something.
I mean, because you and I were talking about it after your phone call that, you know, Dave Mitchell, who's a mutual friend of both of ours, of Next Level, he said he doesn't want to, he doesn't think he wants to send his kids or families out. If, you know, he doesn't want to be liable for that. God forbid anybody gets hurt, right?
Well, I think that's the big thing that I don't want to speak for Dave, but I think everyone has to consider the safety piece of it. You know what I mean? And tournaments have to decide, like, are they going to let parents on? If I do host an event in Baltimore, is it going to be really worth, like Dave is, and all of these club directors are considering, is it going to be worth sending my team there? Mm-hmm. If there's no coaches even there, if the parents can't come. So it's not only if the event's going to be run, but it's what is that event going to look like? What is it going to feel like? I mean, you know, Next Level, BLC, all these club teams, you know, Madlex, they're all, their job is to place those kids and give them a really good experience. And if the experience is not there and they can't place them because college coaches aren't recruiting, which we don't know what will happen with that. Like, yeah, I'm sure everyone's like, why would I send my team there?
Here's the good news, though, is that the more and more data, and I know I keep sounding like a broken record, but a little different nuance to it this week is that the more and more data I'm seeing is that outdoor transmission is almost non-existent, which makes it great for a sport like lacrosse. You know, yeah. Now my daughter plays volleyball. So 1,500 people in a convention center in D.C. might not make sense. But, you know, I think we could safely play in a month or two. And, you know, as this virus phases out a little bit for the summertime, I don't see what I think this is going to turn. I think certainly in the late summer, there's going to be certainly an opportunity for some events and certainly for some of the showcase kind of ideas that you and the high school guys have.
I hope so. I hope you're right. I mean, I do think you're right. I mean, I think July looks better than it did a week ago, you know, yeah. And if you keep trending that way, you know, the National High School Showcase, which is an event, I think I maybe mentioned in one of our first conversations, mm-hmm. you know, great event. It's you know, one of the premier recruiting events, and it's high school teams only. So
when is that typically held?
Well, so there's two. There's a fall showcase, which is always the last weekend in November. And then it's in the summertime right now. It was scheduled for the last week of June. We just got informed over the weekend that it's been moved now to, there's two sessions and they'll run like back to back, I think like the last week or second to last week of July now. That's what they're hoping. And that's in, it is. Right,
I think that's plausible, dude.
Yeah.
People are ready to burst out. They don't even care what the governors are saying anymore. They're just doing their thing.
Yeah.
There's no way this is going to be able to continue for another 2 months, especially when, again, I don't want to get political. This is a lacrosse podcast, but you know, like transmission amongst kids and young adults is like virtually non-existent if you're healthy,
right?
Like, and I like think, literally I mean, almost nothing.
As long as the parents are bored, because I guarantee if you told the kids we're good
we
to play,
go.
They would not question it at all. They said let's go, and especially lacrosse, like you said, it's not like basketball. You're like rubbing up on guys, like. You got pads on. I mean, like,
and it's outdoor. Outdoor transmission is negligible by the data that I'm seeing.
Yeah, I'm not a scientist. I don't know. I don't know what the sun does or doesn't do.
I kind of am a scientist now. I'm practically an MD. I've got this all figured out, buddy.
I know. I'm just gonna rely on you. When you tell me it's good to go out of my house,
I think it's pretty good.
Okay.
Put it this way. It was good enough for me that, you know, I sent Stevie out and my nephew with you, and we socially distanced.
Yeah,
we stayed 6 feet away, but we did a little workout.
You got some flack for that, though. People were pissed.
People were giving me a hard time, but at the end of the day, I know we abided by all the rules. Nobody touched the balls. You know, you just scooped them up with your stick and threw them in the bucket. I mean, it was perfect.
No, I agree. I mean, I've had a couple other lessons, you know, with – you know, individual middle school kids were just, you don't touch them. You're not out there like running around and really, you know, getting close. You're just either shooting or working on individual drills or whatever it may be. So, but you know, like I said, whenever it's good to go out, we're all bursting at the seams. I'm ready to lose my mind.
Yeah.
On some days it depends. Yeah. Like today I am just, you know, running around, chasing my daughter around. But some days I'm like, oh, this is nice. I get to relax. Or
yeah. The sick whatever. Part about this is a sick part of being human is that when we all get back to normal, there's going to be a part of us that yearns for not having a lot to do, to just be hanging around the house.
Just
you know what I mean?
Me if that's me. I feel like that'll be you pretty
I'll try not to verbalize it, but I know I'll think it.
Yeah.
I know I'll think it.
Yeah. No, so we'll see. We'll see. We'll get out there eventually. But I think it's good to be in this area. You know, we're all working. I'm sure a lot of high school coaches across the country are working to figure something out. Club coaches, you got some of the best people that, you know, I think all want to do it for the right reasons, not for necessarily our, you know.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to talk to Brett, and we'll have him up here shortly because, you know, he knows all about the recruiting. And I remember Steven going to his showcase, and Steven didn't particularly show that well that day. Never did particularly great in any of those showcases. But it's interesting to – it will be interesting to hear how he thinks it's going to work out for these kids, for the 21s, and sort of what's the best way for kids to get recruited today.
You know? Yeah, and I think – right, and that question that you just – the last question that you just posed is, what does it look like today? It looks different today than it did 6 months ago. So, but I'm sure he'll tell us about a little bit of both, and it looked a little different for Stevie. Stevie was, you know, I can't even remember now what the rules. Was Stevie part of
– Well, early on, he was caught in between, right? So he accepted and was offered by – no, he was offered by Bellarmine early on, then did accept it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, by senior year, because of there were like three coaching changes there, ultimately switched.
Yeah, obviously now, like, you can't contact, you know, kids before September 1st or their junior year, where it used to be like the early recruiting.
Which is so much better.
Last week. Oh, it's so much better on the coaches, too. You don't have the pressure from the parents to be like, my kid's not getting recruited in ninth grade. And it's like, well, you know, 95% of kids weren't getting recruited in ninth grade. It was you know, the 5% that were the world's, you know, best high school players or whatever it may be. So, as a high school coach, everyone can tell you the recruiting process is different for every kid, and it's a lot about skill. It's a little bit about luck, you know, play, you know how it is. It's like, you would text me. I remember like Stevie just bawled out. Like he had
in front of Harvard. Too bad.
And, yeah, maybe. Or you text me and say, or you'd say, hey, there was no one there, but Stevie just had the best game of his life.
Right. Yeah. And then, it'd be so random.
And he's got six coaches to come watch him play, and he just, you know, like, you know, plays good, but doesn't do anything great, and the ball didn't come down his end. Maybe the other team had a great face-off guy. And
no, it's so like, sort of luck is a huge factor. It's like I'm telling my daughter, too, who's going through the process with volleyball. It's like, you know, who happens to be there when you ball out? You know what I mean? And whoever happens to be there, all of a sudden, now you're on their radar. And, you know, if you're an average student and you ball out in front of Harvard, that doesn't really do you a whole lot of good.
Right. Well, that's why every coach will tell you that consistency is, like, the key. I mean, guys that, you know, I think back to, and I love Alex Smith to death, and he's a senior now at Maryland, and he's playing in one of the best teams in the country. But, you know, when he was on, if you watched him play, I would argue that any coach in the country would have taken him. You know, a kid that can run up and down the field, shoot the ball 100 miles an hour. It's like, wow. But in his high school process, at least, he was inconsistent. So sometimes you go out and watch him play, and like, kid's amazing. Next time you go out and watch him play, I don't know. And, you know, Alex would agree, too. So consistency is the key, and, you know, who you're playing against and who's there watching. And it's a crapshoot. But
Our
job as high school coaches to try to figure it out.
Well, also, I found that having an advocate is huge. And, you know, that's where you and I really got close, is because – you know, Stephen was able really to have opportunities because you pushed for him and you used your connections. And frankly, every kid needs that out there.
Yeah.
Especially, unless you're a stud. You know, like if you're a young Paul Rabel, you don't need that. But if you're like every other kid who's good, you know, can shoot with both hands, but, you know, average size, you need an advocate.
Yeah, and I think, too, sometimes just to get in front of him. Like, you know, it's almost just, hey, let's take a look at this kid. Like, whether it's a relationship that I have or his club coaches have or someone else has, is say, look, just trust me. Go watch this kid, because there are so many good kids and there's so
everyone's good.
So many events to go see. Sometimes these coaches are looking for that little lead to say, like, you know, I only have 5 hours. I can't watch everyone play. And that's where the clubs come into play. They send them a list of kids that, hey, these kids are definitely worth watching. The high school coaches, I think college coaches lean on them a lot because they're around them so much. You know, club coaches, certainly they're going to lean on because they're there from a recruiting standpoint a lot of times. But the high school coaches, character references, what's their GPA, like how are they in high school, like that's where the high school coaches really come into play. And I've seen even more so now with the slow recruiting, college coaches want to know. They want to know, like, what's the kid like at school? Is he showing up, you know, on time to school? Is he 15 minutes late every day? Is he, you know, they want to know all that stuff.
Is he a good kid?
Yeah, exactly. You want to coach good kids, man. It makes a difference. Totally makes a difference.
All right, so when we come back, we'll have Brett Manny. He's the VP of Event Sales and Recruiting for NXT Sports. Don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back. It's funny. Right before I said, don't go anywhere, I thought I was back on the radio show or something. There's nowhere to go. There's no commercials. No one's going anywhere. It was like a 2-second delay. But we're back, and of course, it's our pleasure to introduce our guest today, Brett Manny former Blue Hen, University of Delaware alum, former captain. I counted up 12 years in both the MLL and the NLL. In 2015, he was on the Team USA indoor team, also named their assistant captain. He's currently the VP of event sales and recruiting for NXT Lacrosse and has been with them since their inception. Brett, thanks for joining us, buddy. Appreciate it.
Give it up for him, yes.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Dane, Eric. Sitting here in Philadelphia, and I wish it was better times, but it is what it is. So first and foremost, man, I hope everyone's families are safe and everyone's being smart during this time, and we can get back to sports in the sometime near future.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to get there. We're going to get there.
I think we're going to get there sooner rather than later. Dane and I were just talking about that. But so talk about your season. You know, it wasn't just like the college kids. Like your indoor season was interrupted, right? How many games did you guys have, and how did that all go down?
Yeah, so at this point in time, we were at 11 games. Our season is 18, kind of play like an NFL season, like once every weekend. And you have two back-to-back weekends that run from beginning of the season is first week of December, and it runs till the last weekend of April with playoffs in May and June. But, yeah, we were 11 games in. I think the most the team might have played was 13, and majority of the teams played right around that 11-game time period. So we had a game in Philadelphia, which personally was great for me. It's where I live now, and I grew up in this area, on Saturday, and we beat the Philadelphia Wings.
Right.
And then that Tuesday or Wednesday is when kind of like the news came out, the NBA with the COVID, with like Rudy Gobert getting it, and there were supposed to be games that night. So I think they canceled the NBA on Wednesday. We were canceled on Thursday because I had a back-to-back. I was supposed to go to Friday. I was supposed to fly up to Buffalo. We had a game in Buffalo on Saturday, and then we were going to bust through the night on Saturday to play a game on Sunday against Calgary in the afternoon.
Oh.
That's where we found out, and you know, this is currently where we're at. After a few phone calls with the league and with our team, the regular season's canceled. But they still have aspirations that the playoffs can still be had, and that's where we're at right now.
Well, you better hope that – or you guys were in first place, right? Or right up there, so.
Yeah, we were in first place, 8-3. We won our last four games in a row. We started all 4-0, then we went on a little bit of a losing streak. We lost three in a row, and then we won our last four games. So we had great momentum, and you know, we played this at the Mohegan Sun Arena, and it's just – it's in the casino. It's like kind of a little bit smaller, like 6,000-7,000 people, and we were hoping to bring them like home playoff game, and a lot of the hype was behind us this season, and kind of sucks us to like boom, like come to a halt just the way it did.
Right.
Think about that, Eric. They got a bunch of pro lacrosse players play a game, and then after the game they happen to end up in a casino right afterwards.
I wonder how that would be
a terrible time.
Yeah, dangerous combination.
You don't have to say anything, Brett, but I definitely envy that playing experience.
Pretty fun life, man. Grind it out. That's why you've been doing it for 12 years, I'm sure. It's so fun.
Yeah, it's been a roller coaster for sure, from like when I started to where I'm at now. And I've been so fortunate along the way to have great people by my side, whether that's teammates, that's family, like it's my fiance, it's the owners, all the fans, all these different people that have supported me as I've traveled through the West Coast to play and the East Coast. And fortunate enough, I've been able to see a lot of North America through the game of lacrosse, and I've met so many great people through this game. So I've been very, very, very fortunate.
Well, let's talk about how it all got started then, you know, how you ended up the professional lacrosse player, really, an indoor sensation. You went to Delaware. Talk about your high school experience, though. So was it in Philly?
Yeah, it was in Philly. I grew up playing three sports. I was a multi-sport athlete, and just cut to the chase, when I was in eighth grade, my dad signed us up for lacrosse, like our rec program.
Right.
And we had tryouts, and I was on the B team. And excuse me if I say we, because I have a twin brother. So,
right.
We went from playing that year on the B team, and actually lacrosse was a factor choosing high schools, because my public school system was a good public school system, but at the time I was a much higher basketball and soccer player. I mean, those were my sports, high level AAU, big time club soccer. So the school I chose is called Holy Ghost Prep, and they were just the best soccer and basketball team in the area, and also had the best academics. So I'm like, oh, it's a home run. Plus they have lacrosse. It was kind of like, on the back burner. And then one thing kind of led to another, and I kept getting a little bit better and better. Then I went to, back in the day, this was like 2002, 2003 in the summers. They didn't really have much going on in regards to club teams. So you would just show up at these random showcases, like go to the University of Maryland. There was an event. It was like top 205, but yet there was like 600 kids there. And you play games, get thrown on a team for like 3 days. And then there was like top star Gettysburg and same type of thing. So these recruiting letters started coming in from all these like great universities. And we were like, oh, maybe like lacrosse is the way. Because at the end of the day, basketball is my favorite sport. I still play it to this day. But I was a 6'3" white kid with an average jump shot.
Right.
So my dreams of going to Kansas weren't going to happen. And then soccer-wise, I just kind of grew out of my love for soccer, despite getting highly recruited there as a Division I soccer player. And lacrosse was new. It was fascinating. I could hit. I could run. Do all these, score goals, play defense. It combined all the things which I love to do.
Right.
So therefore, that kind of led me to the University of Delaware and picking there to go to school.
I wonder, how did you even know about like those camps, those showcases? How did you even know about it? I mean, like, you know, I know, you know, when I was growing up, they didn't have any of that stuff, and my parents were clueless. They never would have known if there was something like that. How did your dad even know?
Eric, great question, because my dad grew up in Philadelphia, the section like right outside of Germantown. So he had no idea what lacrosse was, no idea. Like, it was one of those type of stories when he wanted to get, I'm sure you can relate, like as any dad, when you want to get involved with your kid and have him practice, you do whatever you do. So my dad knew he couldn't throw a lacrosse stick, so he grabbed his baseball mitt.
Yeah.
We would throw the ball to my dad. He would catch it.
Yeah.
That's what he was used to. So therefore, I think he just took a little, he just did some due diligence and some digging and asking around. And unfortunately at the time, my high school, it wasn't like exactly an established lacrosse program. So it's not like I really had a coach that could go out and vouch for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like I had an advocate. So therefore, I think my dad just asked a few people and he knew that their kids played lacrosse and what they were doing. And I think he, back then, you could just like, kind of go on Maryland's website, and if they were hosting a recruiting camp, it was actually pretty good. Whereas now you don't know if that's the issue. So Therefore, when you're like, oh, like there's a lot fewer and far choices between back then. So then if someone is running something, which there's probably only like a dozen things, where now there's like 60, you knew that probably out of those dozen, if you chose two or three of them, there's a high possibility that you were going to get recruited. So
might be a little easier, right, to not have to decipher. I mean, that's where club kids now like use you and use high school coaches to figure out what events are good. But how about ending up at Delaware? Like, obviously you said you got a bunch of letters, you know, what ended up placing you there? And then obviously get to the point of, obviously, for those who don't know, ended up playing in the Final Four. And I don't think, you know, Alex Smith, who was the stud of your Delaware team, obviously at the faceoff was the big name back then. But just talk us through the recruiting piece and what ended up, you know, being at Delaware and playing for a legend, the guy that I don't know how long you know, Coach Hill's coach there for, but he was there for a very, very long time and just recently retired, right?
Yeah, I think he was there for certainly over 30 years, maybe 40 years. Coach Hill's, aka Bernie Lomax, in practice and stuff, when I would score goals, I would just do like a weekend of Bernie stance, and everyone thought it was pretty funny.
But yeah, guys, people got to Google him. Yeah, I would definitely Google him. That's an appropriate reference.
Yeah, legendary mustache. When the sun hit his sunglasses at a certain angle, he was certainly Bernie Lomax. But So I mean, kind of came down to Delaware, Fairfield, Navy, were like kind of my top, and Bucknell, they were like my top four. And actually, I really wanted to play at Notre Dame because I was a big, big Rudy fan and loved like Notre Dame football when I was a kid. And actually, I went on a visit there to meet the soccer coach and just tried to meet the lacrosse coach when I was there, and met those guys in their office, be like, hey, like, you should check me out. That's where I really want to go. But they didn't express the same interest as some of these other schools.
Can you imagine that? Just pause there for a second. Brett walks through your door. He's like 6'3". Hey, I'd like to try to play for you. And they're like, no, we're good. We'll take the other guys.
Yeah, we got this 5'11" kid from North Jersey. We're okay.
Right. Exactly. He's got really good hands.
Now, did you even have video back then? Like, were you trading highlight film? Like, how was that working?
Yeah, Eric, my dad was a saint, man. Like, when you start to realize like just the amount of effort and stuff that he went through. So you had VHS.
Yeah.
So my coach's mom would just film every game. just we could go and like review it and stuff like that. And I remember my dad asking, hey, can we get the film like to send out to college coaches? So you had the VHS, and then what you had to do was we had to get all the VHSs together and we had to watch them for the plays.
Right.
And then be like, all right, at the 2:45 mark against Abington goal. And then we would write all the highlights down and give like a whole stack of the VHSs to this lady that worked with my dad. Her son was like good with computers, and he ended up making the highlight tape. When we get off the call, I'll show you my highlight tape, because one of my colleagues like put it on YouTube, and it's hilarious. Like the music, what is on there, like how ugly my game was back then. It was, I think, for my sophomore junior year. It's phenomenal.
But it did the trick though.
Yeah, it did the trick. Like, just had to get their attention. And because I was a three sport athlete, once I got to Delaware, I was comfortable with the assistant coaches. I was like, what did you guys see in me? Like, I barely played lacrosse. Like, even back then, I was practicing on my own, and I went to these showcases, and that was it, because Tuesdays and Thursdays I had summer basketball, and then like Wednesday and Friday at summer soccer, like leagues, and then I was going to camps and stuff for that. And I remember it was like Schillinglaw or the other assistant coach at the time, Greg Carroll, wrote down like raw, very raw, like fastest kid on the circuit. And like, we need to recruit him because of that. But so going back to like kind of the original question, Dane, was I was just fascinated with the school. Like, when I got on campus, I'm like, this reminded me of a college campus. I knew I wanted to go away from my parents and my family, but I didn't want to go too far away. God forbid something were to happen. So I stepped on campus at Delaware. I'm like, wow, look at the brick buildings and the green grass and the facilities. And that was also the time too where you could take 5 official visits in like your senior fall. So I took them, and I had a blast when I was at Delaware. Like, those are stories for another day. Right. And I just kind of fell in love with the place. And I went on my recruiting visit in like October of my senior year. And at the time, I told him, like, look, like, we have a very good basketball team. I want to commit to a school when I'm done basketball, because this means a lot to me. And go figure, like, we went to the state championship. So that was in March. So I committed to Delaware like first week of April as a senior.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, like, times have changed. Yeah.
Definitely. Which probably, I mean, it's good to be able to take those 5 officials. Guys can still take official visits now, but typically they've already made their decision by their junior year. So they're typically only taking one official. They're taking an official, you know, right, at least lacrosse wise, although it's starting to trend a little bit more towards football. And then what about once you got to Delaware? Obviously, you know, made a big impact. You were a team captain there. And then, I mean, two Final Fours, and Delaware is obviously now, for as we fast forward to where we're at now, they're doing a great job of getting that school back to its prestige, because, you know, obviously when you guys were there, it was, you guys were near the top.
Yeah, well, I think two of my 4 years went to NCAA tournament. Three of the, every year we went to CAA semifinals at least, and then 3 of the 4 years we went to the CAA championship game. So we had some studs. Guy that might ring a bell, Chris Collins, was assistant, longtime assistant coach at Drexel. He was my goalie my freshman year, and he was an All-American. And then a guy who was a year above me was Alex Smith, who, Dane, you kind of mentioned, and Alex kind of rewrote the record books for lacrosse and was like the name for so many years, kind of until Trevor and T.D. Erling came around. Jordan Hall, who's one of the best midfielders in the last 20 years, indoor-outdoor guy, too. For 13 years, he was a year above me. And then 2 years below me was Curtis Dixon, and he's been a professional lacrosse player for the last 10 years. So, and two of those guys were Canadians, and Curtis and Jordan. So we had a lot of talent and like superb athletes and guys that had very good skill set. We didn't have the depth like Johns Hopkins or Virginia, but pound for pound, like our first 13 guys versus any other 13 guys in the country were just there as far as talent level. And like, you know, Coach Chills was an interesting guy, and I love him for letting me showcase my personality and let me play on the field without much restrictions. And dude, to be honest, like my first year, I didn't play much. I played like 4 games and they were blowouts. And I really didn't pick up the game, the speed of the game, until like my March of my freshman year. And by that point in time, like, I don't blame the coaches. They weren't ready to throw me into a game. So they just like kind of kept me on the sidelines and said, hey, like, we know you're good enough, but you're just not there yet. And then I just hit the ground running my sophomore year. And junior year, we went to the Final Four, which is unreal, because at that point in time, there was only like 7 schools that ever played in the Final Four. And there was no parity in lacrosse. And here came like this this little school, Delaware, with these guys from Canada and all over the place that we were bad. I mean, it was a 3-2 game with 3 minutes left in the third quarter against Johns Hopkins at M&T Bank Stadium at the time where the Ravens play. Like, we were going toe-to-toe with those guys, and that's the year they won the national championship. So it was a great experience. I loved it there, everything about it. And now it's kind of cool what Coach DeLuca has done and his staff and trying to right the ship, to say, because that place, no matter if it's, you know, Dan, it's you as a high school coach, or Eric, it's you as a parent, or someone else that's on like kind of the circuit, they're like, man, I'm just, Delaware is just a sleeping giant, right? And kind of waiting for them to get a little bit back to the glory days. But I think they can do better than the kind of what we did, with everything that they have, location, the facilities that are there, the coaching staff, the school. It doesn't hurt that there's like 68% girls there. So that was a huge selling point for me.
Yeah, that's why you're visiting all boys school.
Right. Yeah. talk about that game against Hopkins. Did they win two when Rabel's tenure there?
Yeah, they won when I think Eric, when he was a freshman. They won that year, and then they won his junior year, and then his senior year he put on like an epic performance because we're the same grad year. That's when he scored like 6 goals against Cuse and put them on their back, and they lost by 1 or 2 goals. So. Ooh. It's kind of interesting. Like, we were teammates and roommates my first 2 year out of school, traveling with the indoor team together.
Right.
And if you guys are watching like The Last Dance and you talk about competition and everything like that, like, that dude is a like competitor. Like,
right.
Like, whether it's chess or checkers, and I'm the same way. Like, dude, we would just go at even like one-on-ones and little things like that. Who could eat this apple faster?
Right.
Like, talk about like competing. And it was interesting because subtly we weren't trying to be like, I'm better than you or anything along those lines, or who's more athletic or bigger, stronger, faster. But it was just kind of something that you were always like going at it, but had like a mutual friendship and appreciation for it.
Right. A kind of an unspoken thing. Yeah. We've gotten to know Paul pretty well. You know, I went to DeMatha. He went to DeMatha. He's been on the show a bunch. Exactly. He's been great to my kid and you know, great to all of us. So I really love what he's doing, with the PLL and that sort of thing. And I just, you know, when he was going through that run at Hopkins, you know, later he became, you know, remember the famous, he was the LeBron James of lacrosse. I can't remember who wrote that. I was that in the New York Times or something, or Fortune magazine or whatever it was. But in college, was he as well known as he later became?
Yeah, but not, I mean, within the lacrosse circle, he certainly was. And you just got to remember, like, lacrosse wasn't on TV as much then. Like, in the Final Four, you always knew that those games were going to be televised, and maybe the quarterfinal game. So as long as you're in the tournament going far, which Hopkins always was back then,
yeah,
everyone was going to know who Paul Rabel was. And to kind of put it in perspective, during my 4 years at school, everyone had a scouting report. And if you were, like, really good, you maybe got like a quarter of a page on like your tendencies, maybe a half.
Right.
There were two guys that took up a full page. One was Matt Danowski at Duke, and the other one was Rabel. And the crazy thing I'll never forget about Rabel was you forced him to his strong hand, because he worked so hard at his offhand shooting that it was better with his right hand. And like, I admire him for that. I'm like, because every time he went to his left, you knew that he was going to get a shot on net. And we knew if he went to his right, he was more likely to pass, or his shot wasn't as accurate. And that was like kind of the game plan. It was like, force him to his strong hand. Rather, if he got to his left, you knew like he would bury it. Cause that's, and that was just showed how hard he worked at his offhand.
Right.
But now with like Twitter, I remember when he got Twitter, it was like, we were rookies. I'm like, what the hell is Twitter?
Right.
So he was getting on like the social media then a little bit before everyone else. And then social media like erupted.
Yeah.
And he just like dove in, with 2 feet into it. And I can tell you with that and YouTube, all the other guys are hesitant just because of society and how they wanted to look. They didn't want to be that guy. And God bless Paul. Like, this is what he wanted to do. And he knew like, this is how he was going to feed himself and stuff. And he had to put himself in the limelight. And a lot of guys give him criticism for it as a result, because it's kind of frowned upon, like an unwritten rule within like the pro lacrosse community, but he was able to make a name for himself and kind of grow the game with those platforms. So I tip my hat to him.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, he was kind of the first guy to kind of brand himself, you know what I mean? And then other guys have taken suit, both in the NLL, probably more in the PLL and the MLL.
That's the whole model for marketing.
Those Canadian guys don't like to talk a lot. No, they just like to chirp. And
they chirp on the field. They chirp on the field really well, but it comes to social media, not so much.
Yeah, those couple guys that you play with, for people that really don't, I mean, they can look him up. But Curtis Dixon, you know, I played against him. He's actually really good friends with a few of my teammates because obviously he played with a lot of Canadian guys. I mean, he's one of the top, in my opinion, top 10 best players in the world. Field, indoor, outdoor, it doesn't matter. He didn't play in the MLL, and I don't know if he's coming back to play in the PL this summer or what he'll do. But, I mean, he was dominant in college, absolute dominant. And he's played in the world games too, in the outdoor game, and he's dominant there. I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah, I think in the last World Games, or maybe the World Games before, he was like one of the all-world attackmen.
Yeah.
One of the top three attackmen that was there.
How did you end up in box? Like, how did you become a box monster? You mentioned you and Paul were on the same box team. How did all that come about?
Yeah, so my rookie year, I'll go back to my senior year at Delaware. The guy I mentioned, Chris Collins, was like, hey, I know you're going to go to the MLL and guys are going to draft you, and you know, you're very sought after field player, but when that's done, like, I think you should seriously give a thought to playing box. And I really didn't, to be honest. All I thought about was like the MLL. And I played my rookie year back at that time was the Washington Bayhawks, which eventually became the Chesapeake Bayhawks, and the GM of the San Francisco Dragons. I'm really dating myself. This guy's name is Doug Locker, and he saw me playing then, and he knew who I was from, like, playing at Delaware. And this guy would just his like claim to fame was finding Americans and then making them like commit to the box game. So he was stringing me along, like, "Hey, we're gonna draft you. We're gonna draft you. We're gonna draft you." Never drafts me, and I'm like, "Damn, like, you son of a bitch! Like, you're gonna freaking draft me." And I'm waiting for like a phone call all day, and nothing happens. And then he calls me the next morning, signs me as an undrafted rookie free agent, and went out to San Jose for training camp, and kind of the rest is history. When I was a rookie, there was five of us. It was myself, that were American. Myself, Rabel, another guy, Kyle Hartzell, who's been playing professional lacrosse like the last 12, 13 years. Kid Will Dalton from Maryland, and then Michael Doniger, who also played at Hopkins. And between the five of us, you know, three out of five were on the active roster from day one. And I just fell in love with it, Eric, just because of basketball, like how quickly I could relate to it from the game of basketball, like reading picks and understanding them. And I took a lot of self-pride in being like a great lacrosse player. And I knew like in field I wasn't great, and I like turned into like making something out of myself by playing field with all my hard work and dedication. And now box was like a new challenge for me. And I'm like, well, like, there's a lot of things that are very similar into basketball, and if I can try to be a great box player, it only makes me a much more complete field player. And when you start to get to this level and you talk to guys, you need the respect of like the Canadians, not only the Americans, to be considered an incredible lacrosse player. So like, for instance, if you only play, and the greatest respect I think you can have is from your peers. So therefore, if you only play in the MLL or the PLL, some guys are like, well, like, he's a great field player, but he's never played box, or he tried to play box and he didn't have what it took and got cut. Or like vice versa, if a guy's a great, most likely it's Canadian, that's a really good box player, but can't translate to the field game for whatever purpose, like, well, he's just a great box player. So I had the field aspect game down, and I was like, how do I master this box game? And from that competitive nature, like, to be one of the best, I felt I had to invest so much in the box as well. And it's kind of what happened.
What skill set did you have to work on the most?
Oh, dude, my hands. Yeah. Like, totally, totally hands. I'm blessed that I'm like 6'3" and 320 pounds, and I can move. Like, my quickness and being able to run in a straight line, and like quick little like three cone drill, that stuff is like second nature to me. But being able to catch something in tight and being able to have soft hands and the reactions, like, that took me a while. Like, not even the physicality, because I, like I said, because of basketball, I was able to pick up on that. And it was just like how fast things happened was really what I struggled with. And I quickly had to pick up on those things to become, and I'm still not great at it. Like, I'm still kind of learning, but that's the one thing where like, a shot goes and the Canadians on the other side, like, know where the ball's coming off of. Or if they throw you a pass in tight, like Americans, we're so stiff. We hold on to our stick so hard and they have such soft hands. They can catch anything or throw it to a stick. And sometimes you think you're guarding a guy, and if his stick's open, then he's open. And then they throw it in there, it's a goal. You're like, Jesus Christ. So to throw to stay in some of those different nuances, I think was tough. And like, yeah, getting your hands down was certainly the toughest thing for me. As wild as it is, no one told me until I was 22 to have soft hands. And he's trying to work on soft hands.
But that's also why, too, boxes become, and I say box and I say this lightly, and I know NXT does a great job with it, but box has become so big in America, and everyone's been pushing it on, especially at the younger levels, because they want kids to improve their hands. And if you practice the right way, and Brett, you can tell us, like, what is the right way? You know, if you practice box the right way, it will improve your hands. You know, I don't know if you did. Do you ever play seniors or no? You don't go over the border and play over the summertime. But I mean, I spent a month, you know, doing senior A, senior B. My hands, which were not good to begin with, improved drastically by just being in a in a smaller environment. So I can only imagine playing for 12 years. What's that done with your hands? And then, you know, obviously, what it can do for our kids in America if we do it the right way. We say we play box here, and some kids just want to split and rip down the alley, and like that's not box.
Yeah, totally. I think you gotta like understand the nuances of the game and practicing as much as you can, and understand like you don't have to throw it that hard. You just gotta throw it at someone's stick and learn how to catch softly and those types of things. Like even now, if you would ask the team of my 20-25 teammates, I would say, you know, if they would rank me on hands because I'm American, I'd be like 22. And the other three guys that are below me would be American just because we are. And I don't take a knock on that, like, because those guys have such good hands. But and it's funny now, like when I go play the field game, it's so much easier. Like everything's slowed down. Like I feel like there's so much more I can do. And also I'm like, I don't even need to shoot from outside 12 yards anymore. Like give me the ball and what I can do inside like 7-8 yards and I'll find the back of the net. Cause it's like shooting the, like kind of a beach ball into the ocean. Like I just feel like the added values of what you can do from playing box is like, can only help your field game.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, I tell our kids, especially they go on to college, like if you can somehow get over the border and play juniors, like while you're in college, you come back your sophomore, junior year, it can be a game changer. What about for you, like Team USA, captain of the Black Wolves? Like what is, those are probably, I would imagine, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but two of the most accomplished things that you've done, right? Being able to represent your country and then are you the only American captain in the NHL?
Yeah, only American captain. Even before that, when I was like wearing an A for 5-6 years, something like that, was only American that was like in a captain group. So for me, it's a huge badge of honor. And I think like I previously mentioned, like just the respect you get from your teammates, and these are all guys that are Canadians that, you know, they don't really know who you are before you step in there, unless you're like a Paul Riebel, you're the number one guy in college across, then they know. But to everyone else, they have no idea who you are. And just to get those respected that at this level, like I'm dealing with men and guys that have families and stuff like that. And when it's game day and during the week, like they're looking at me for advice. So in like the Black Wolves, they're looking at me to break down the huddle and looking for me what to say before a game or in the locker room when times get tough, or even something like, hey, where are we going to go grab lunch? Those little things. So to have the admiration of them and to know that they'll follow me is a huge badge of honor. Like, there's no way to be able to top that. And the same goes for Team USA. When you're representing your country and you're wearing that C on your chest with the greatest lacrosse players in the country. And it's just like I mentioned before, like they're looking at me like, hey, what are we going to do here? Without physically telling me, you can see it in their eyes in certain situations and stuff. And knowing that not only you're a player, but you're a coach, you're a friend, you're a mentor, you're a counselor to them in many, many different stages. And when we ended our last game, which quite possibly could be my last game throwing on a USA shirt, was, you know, telling those young guys, like, here's what you got to do. Like, this is what you have to do to beat the Iroquois and to beat Canada and to make sure that you left this place better than how you found it, and that those guys know the right way to lead, and making sure – you know, I'm telling the Matt Rambos and the Shrivers and the Blaze Reardons, all these young guys, like, you got to get these younger guys playing box, and you got to make this better so our country's better, because we're the United States of America and we're the greatest country on earth, and we don't settle for bronze or silver.
I was going to I was going to say, yeah, on that 2015 team, are there field players that we're aware of, or were they all just indoor stars?
What did you play? Was it 15? Was the last? Was that the last World Games, Brett?
19. So 19. We were in Vancouver. 19. In September. Yeah, yeah. And this one was wild. Like 19 was wild because there was so much uncertainty and there was so much confusion because the PLL Championship weekend conflicted with the World Championships with Box. So therefore, got every single guy that was playing in the PLL, which was like half of our roster, or maybe even more for the U.S. team. He's like, yeah, I'm all in on Team USA. I'm in, blah, blah, blah. Like, but if we make it to the championship game, I got to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So you were kind of like hoping some guys were in, some guys not. So when the Whipsnakes won, it was Matt Dunn, Matt Rambo, and Connor Kelly were the three guys that they literally played a game on Saturday and they won. And God knows they're probably on like an hour's sleep, or if not, maybe came right to the airport and they were in British Columbia at 2 p.m. the next day.
Wow.
So, and they already missed the first, we started games maybe Tuesday and we all got there maybe Saturday. So they already missed a week. And then they came in for the last 6 to 7 days of the tournament. But yeah, Eric, back to your original point, the 2015 team, we had, Casey Powell, the leadership group was myself, Casey Powell, Kevin Buchanan. And then we had guys like Drew Snyder, Marcus Holman, Blaze Reardon.
Oh, Joel a bunch White. Of guys. A bunch of guys that, you know, that college fans would know. You know
yes,
what I mean?
Totally. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And that's kind of been the struggle, is trying to get the best American guys to believe in it and trying it. And I believe U.S. Lacrosse and some pivotal older guys, too, have done a really good job over the last 5, 6, 7 years of getting these best guys to play indoor as well.
And it's helped, too, obviously. I mean, obviously, you got Philly coming back, which I know, you know, you played for a few years, right?
Yeah,
and but any like having teams in the United States as far as NLL teams helps, you know, having a team out in San Diego, you know, it's definitely attractive for Americans to say, hey, maybe it is worth learning the Box game if I get to go to San Diego and play, or get to go to New England and play, which, you know, wasn't always the case. So it makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, like great point, Dame. Take this for instance, like 3 or 4 years ago, there was only like 9 Americans. So if I graduated college, that would have been like 2016, around there, 2017. It would have been so freaking hard to make a team because, you know, the Canadian teams weren't going to take an American. And then basically Buffalo and Rochester almost are Canadian teams.
Mm-hmm.
So you're screwed right there. So you're looking at, and Philly wasn't in the league anymore. You're looking at, all right, New England, Denver, and then you have like Georgia, Minnesota.
You had Washington, right? But then they moved to Vancouver.
To Vancouver. So you're looking at like 3-4 teams out of 9 that might take an American. And even us with New England, we were hesitant to take an American because we practiced every Tuesday night in Ontario.
Mm.
So therefore, you were just the chances we're making a team were super slim. Not to say politics come involved, but guys like their guys and where they're from. So if you're a no-name guy that doesn't have an advocate or doesn't have something that, you know, you can – hold on to, that makes it very tough. And now, like you said, that now there's San Diego and their owner and GM are like one American kid's in there. There's Philadelphia. I'm hearing that there's going to be like Dallas in the league in the next 2 years, and another U.S. market, Vegas, and even another one after that. So it's a lot better when fans can go to a game and they're like, hey, we got Brett Manning from the University of Delaware, rather than Joe Schmo from Guelph University in Ontario. You know, they want to kind of be able to market some guys and know where guys went to school. And I think like with the expansion and playing in the States and more guys that are only going to be beneficial for those fan bases and the league too.
And people don't know, obviously we're in DC. People don't realize the fans that you guys get. And I know I want to jump in, and Eric, I know you do too, with the NXT stuff and, you know, learn a little bit more about the recruiting aspect of everything. But I mean, the NLL games, you're playing in Buffalo and Rochester, those are selling out 10 to 12,000 people. You know, Eric and I were just talking about the PLL a little mm-hmm. bit, you know, off air, if you will, or whatever. Obviously, you want fans to be there, and it can, those barns can get packed. I mean, those environments are, that's why I think the NLL really is the most successful professional lacrosse league.
Yeah.
If you think about it from an income standpoint.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's like putting butts in seats and yeah. That's how you make money with like ticket sales. So yeah, you play in Denver, you could be playing in front of 16,000 people. My first ever exhibition game was in Denver, and they had like 10,000 people there. Buffalo the same way. We had a playoff series against Buffalo 3 years ago, and when we played there, it was sold out. They had 18,000 people. And even for us, like, we play in an arena that's 7, and we get 5,500, 6,000 people there consistently, and it feels like it's sold out, and it's really loud. So, yeah, to play in some of these barns is great. Where and look, like, they failed. I played in San Jose my first year, and it was crickets. Georgia's a very tough barn because they don't get a ton of people there. And, you know, with the new commissioner and what they're trying to do and trying to make a better business model and find the right strategic business partners that have a lot of coin and a lot of pocket behind them is part of it too. Because from a business standpoint, they had guys that were worth millions. Now they have guys that are worth like hundreds of millions. So as you guys might know, with the finances and owning a team, a lot of times besides the NBA or NFL, if you own a professional team, you're probably going to lose money. And it's just on how much that owner is willing to sit on that and lose it, is basically how much they make and if it's a good business strategy for them.
Who has the broadcast rights?
For the NLL, I believe, like, we do the games are on Bleacher Report, and that is like a subsidiary of Turner Sports.
Right. And is it a subscription-based deal?
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. If there's a way to open that up, that's when the floodgates open. That was the genius of the PLL, really, is their deal with NBC.
And I think a lot of that goes back to, not to talk business again with sports, but like the collective bargaining agreement. So when you're negotiating with NBC or ABC or ESPN, like, they want to know that the players and the owners have a great relationship. And if a CBA goes on for 8 years, they know, like, okay, like, this is pretty sustained here, and we can be able to do something, maybe not this year, but next year, and we're going to be good for the next 7 years. But if you know there's CBA agreements that are always coming up and stuff like that, and it doesn't look like the league's stable, then from what I've heard and different negotiations people have said, that's when the big dogs are kind of turned away. So I'm assuming when Paul came in and he started getting NBC, and I heard there were rumblings about the Olympics with lacrosse, and NBC being involved with that was a big deal. And yeah, and even with the gold package and there's good games getting on NBC is a super big deal. But I feel like sometimes too, Eric, you got to fight in the winter season. You got to fight with the NBA. You got to fight with NHL for primetime spots, and even in the tail end of the season with football. So,
right.
But the more you can get the game out there on TV is phenomenal. But for me, like, there's nothing better than actually watching an indoor lacrosse game. It's one of those rare sporting events. Like, you actually want to be there and watch it.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, so let's talk about your role at NXT and how all that started. You've been there since almost the beginning, correct?
Yeah. So that goes back to a Delaware connection. One of my best friends at Delaware, he even goes back to, like, my recruiting trip. Marty Kuprion, he's a local Philly guy too. He went to Episcopal Academy. When he was at Episcopal Academy, his head coach was Andy Hayes. Andy Hayes needed a PA announcer, so kind of left this out. I used to do the Delaware football and basketball games. I did color commentary, and then I would do the play-by-play as well.
Nice.
And I actually hosted my own TV or weekly radio show where we talked about sports too.
Perfect.
He's right at home right now.
Yeah. So, that's why he's killing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so therefore, that's why I had all this background. And, you know, I eventually wanted to get into broadcasting. And those guys knew I had experience to, like, handle the PA system and all that type of stuff. So Andy Hayes had this private versus public showcase back in the day, like the original Philly showcase. It was in the springtime. And it was the best sophomores that are public versus private and the best juniors public versus private at Haverford College. And it was like a random Thursday night, the first week of June. And I did that and helped them out. And then Marty kind of said, hey, like, by the way, like, Brett's also a professional lacrosse player and went to Delaware with me and so on and so forth. And Andy wanted to start a club team. So he asked if I wanted to help coach that first ever team, which those kids were current eighth graders. At the time, going into high school, and they graduated high school in 2014. So I started coaching, and then within 1.5, 2 years, Next started to become more of a business, and they offered me a full-time position as like a director of communications. And then once they kind of realizing like my skill set and different types of connections, I took over on the event side as being our director of Showcase Across. And then now I'm the VP of sales and recruiting. And here we are today, man.
And for, I mean, for people too, I mean, obviously this is a lacrosse podcast, so I think I'm sure a lot of people already know about Next or NXT. I don't know. Which one do you want us to say, Brett? I don't know.
It's funny because in the beginning, we would always just be like Next. And even if like you kept saying it, we just would like keep saying it or sometimes like say, hey, it's Next. But now, dude, I don't give like a rat's ass if you want to say NXT or Next. Like, it doesn't matter.
All right. I always say NXT. The gear that I got, they give out.
Yeah, good swag. Good swag.
They got a Nike sponsor and everything.
Oh,
but,
nice.
But no, I mean, obviously you guys run some of the biggest events, Philly Showcase in the summertime. You guys do the Philly Showcase right in the fall as well. And, you guys run an event now down in Baltimore. And I know there's hundreds of other ones that, are up and down the East Coast, and they're really well run. I mean, that's the thing as a college coach, former college coach and a high school coach now that I've worked in both capacities. They do a great job. I'm saying that because they give you a lot of gear. Huh. They're small. They're intimate.
Yeah,
they're,
the numbers are good. Like
the numbers are good. The coaches, Brett does a good job of. He understands, what it takes to get college coaches to show up, and so they do a great job. But just tell us about like that part for you, because you were director of Showcase, but now you're event management. So what does that look like for you now? And then obviously, you're running all these great events, but you have no idea if they're going to actually run. You know what I mean? Yeah. So what are you guys doing there?
Yeah. So yeah, I went from just being in charge of kind of our Showcase events. So that's all the recruiting events that we had. And then, I kind of transitioned 3 to 4 years ago to overseeing our boys events. So youth and high school. And I have a colleague, Ryan Long, and he does a great job kind of overseeing the youth. So I help him with the youth side. And then I kind of like take a little bit of the lead still on the recruiting side, but we work together and hand in hand. But I have to oversee kind of all the actuals with the business standpoint of the events and what they look like, how many teams can come, how much a facility is, what are we going to charge teams to come to this tournament. And we now have 50 events between boys and girls that we run throughout the country, as far west as Rockford, Illinois and Dallas, Texas, to as far south as just outside of Tampa.
Wow.
And then as far north as New Haven, Connecticut, because we run an event at Yale that we partnered with Andy Shea, the head coach. But majority of them are in the Mid-Atlantic region. So I kind of started there, went to oversee like the boys events to now, like we're talking this whole uncertainty, like what's going to happen this summer. So once, news broke about COVID and obviously with, like I stated earlier, with even like my league ended, no one knew what to do. Like college coaches didn't know what to do. College players didn't know what to do. Pro guys didn't know what to do. Guys working in the business, high school guys didn't know what to do.
I still don't know what to do.
Yeah. And even I'm coaching at the Haverford School, Dane. So, we would have meetings there.
You're there with Dawson right now? Are you coaching?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. All right.
Yeah. He's the man. And we're trying to figure out everything there. So, we have contingency plans for events and mitigation plans, and they're different. So we're keeping our fingers crossed. We can still run the events we can, but what are they going to look like? And we're telling people that if we were to run an event, do not consider what is a typical event to be run. We will have limited people there. Games might be back to back just so you can get people in and out of a facility. We're going to build in gaps so people aren't at the facility. There's going to be, maybe one parent per player, maybe one parent per team. We're doing all this type of stuff to kind of limit the interactions that are at the event, but still try to give people an experience, but it's just not going to be the same Next experience of all the bells and whistles and stuff that we've done that cost a lot of money in the past that we can do this summer. So we're kind of keeping our fingers crossed and open up our lines of communication. We're calling people, we're emailing them, we're texting them and doing all these little things to try to act as if they're still running until a higher authority, such as the governor of a state, whether that is the CDC or whether that's Trump, is like, nope, you can't run it. And then figure out what to do from there. So trying to stay ahead of the game, but just like Eric and Dane, just like you, like we have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. And that's the whole uncertainty, because once something does happen, usually someone knows before someone else, like everyone's going to know at the same time. So therefore that's a mystery.
So you have 50 events. So are you just like every week you're canceling one? like, you know, 6 weeks out? Like, how does that work? Where are you up to now where, okay, if we opened, you know, next week, then in 6 weeks we could get going, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so our first event that we were going to run was in Florida in 2 weeks. And we made a decision a month ago, it's a boys event, let's push this back to June.
Yeah.
We had the girls event running at the same facility, and that way we didn't have to have as many people. Let's push it back then. And then we had an event at the end of May, one in North Carolina, and one in Dallas, Texas. And we decided like 2 weeks ago, all right, let's move those back. So the Dallas one, we pushed back to the middle of June, and the Carolina one, we pushed back to the middle of July. And we are looking at everything kind of like within a 30-40 day window because of hotels. So if someone has to book a hotel, a lot of times you got to let the hotel know before 30 days or else you won't get your money back, or they'll keep a majority of it from the parents. So we're trying to think there, but we don't want to make a knee-jerk decision, but at the same point in time, we want to make a smart decision. And like I've been saying, a lot of people, you're seeing the trend is they're moving June events to July, and everything is becoming backloaded on like the last 2 weeks of July, which usually there's never been any lacrosse. And the problem you're going to come into with high school recruiting is who knows if the college coaches, A, can even come. I know of one school in particular that's not traveling to recruit, like Rollins down in Florida. But who's going to know if just because June doesn't run, who's to say July events are going to run? Mm-hmm. So, and if they are, that end of July is going to be a cluster, you know what, because some kids could be playing almost every day for 9 or 10 days. And that's when it gets to be ugly lacrosse too.
Be hot.
You go from not picking up a stick to playing consistently for 10 days. And how can you even get recruited? Or if you're at a youth event, like how are these even going to be competitive games?
Yeah. Right. It's almost like, is it even better to just wait till the fall? Because at that point, kids have been playing wall ball for 4 straight months and then they're going to be out in the field. So that's something we talked about, you know, that backload is just going to be crazy. And we've already seen it. I was telling Eric, you know, some national high school showcases pushed back to July. There's other, I think the adrenaline event in June pushed back to July. I think the one thing I was crossing my fingers, and I would be curious if you've heard anything, it's just like August is a dead period for the NCAA. They can't recruit, but you know, it would be amazing if they just said, look, it is going to be a little bit crazy in June. So let's give, you know, spring sports July and August and allow college coaches to recruit. I don't even know if that's fit, you know, possible, but
why wouldn't it be? Why wouldn't it be? See, I think you guys are going to be in a good spot. And Dane and I were just talking about it before we had you on. You know, the more and more data that I'm seeing, and again, I don't want to be political by any stretch, but the outdoor transmission is almost negligible, certainly for young people, you know, which I think really opens up the door for this. I mean, I really think in a month or two, we're going to be in a totally different spot. Indoor sports might be an issue. My daughter plays volleyball at a convention center with 1,500 people. Okay, that's going to be a problem. But I don't think this is.
Yeah, and that's what we've talked about, Eric. It's a great point from the fact that, yeah, if it was volleyball or AAU basketball and you're inside and you're constantly touching the same ball that someone else just did and so on and so forth. But when it's lacrosse and, you know, really only the guys that are close are the guys that are playing on the ball and doing the face-off situations, it's a little bit different. And not everyone's touching the ball and doing all these things. And if you limit the interaction in between games, so there's no tailgating, kids go back to the cars and do that type of stuff, no grandparents at games. And like you're saying, these younger kids and really younger people in general, as long as you don't have the pre-existing, like your medical conditions, or you're not smoking a pack of cigarettes a day.
Right.
What we're seeing is, the COVID with a lot of people is, and like I said, I'm not a health expert, but it's a really bad cold. So they're not suffering the same as some other people. Knock on wood, there still are some extreme cases. But
right.
That being said, I think when it comes to us compared to our peers in the volleyball and in the basketball.
Indoor sports, they're in trouble. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're in trouble. But I think outdoor can get away with it. And I do basically consider myself a doctor now about this. And I think I'm giving it the okay.
Yeah, Brett, you're not local, but if you turn on 106.7 in the morning, you'll hear Eric giving his daily briefing.
I pontificate every day. Yeah, yeah.
Well, look, before we kind of wrap up here, I want you to talk a little bit about like the recruiting piece, because obviously, you know, you've done a tremendous job. I mean, if you look at not just you, I mean, you coach really good, great players, and they've ended up going to some great schools. And you look across the NCAA, how many, you know, Division I, maybe you know it offhand, Division I, Division II, Division III players NXT has sent, and you've been instrumental in that process. And, you know, I like to think we have listeners. I have no idea yet.
Oh, we do.
Even if it's just my mom listening, she might be curious.
Hey, Mrs. Smith.
Yeah, exactly. Just kind of how, what are you telling families, and like, how are you walking them through that process? Just kind of give us, obviously, what are you telling them now with the COVID stuff, but just in general, you know, the process for kids and, you know, what kids you see go on to be successful, and what aspects they maybe have in their game that others don't.
Yeah, certainly the recruiting process has changed when, I think it was 3 years ago now, they implemented those new rules, which were great. I mean, that should have been the case from the beginning, because when you had eighth graders recruiting the schools that they never have even stepped foot on, I think it was crazy. Was it the best for me as a business? No. But I think it's best holistically for the sport and for kids and their families. So that was a home run there. When I've seen some of the kids that have played in our club program been successful, the best ones have chosen schools that, you know, if they were to get hurt or something were to happen, they still were in love with the school. Look, whether you're Next or whether you're the Crabs or whether you're Long Island Express, you know, not every single kid that commits to a D1 or a top D3 school ends up playing there. You know, I bet one fourth of the kids don't make it playing there throughout their career, or transfer or quit, or maybe in some cases they get cut. So you have to really make sure that you are being like a great counselor to these kids and their families that have never gone down this path before, and they trust you, and you're going to have to earn that trust and lead them in the right direction, because there are some people out there that just want to throw a kid through school so they can get on to the next kid. And you got to make sure you seek the opinion of, you know, people like yourself, Dane, that's an outstanding high school coach who's got the best interest of a kid, because even though I'm in the club industry, there's not every club guy's got the best interest for his kid. He wants to sell the next kid down the river and then keep going on. So you need to make sure that you trust the people that are around you and get the best investment for what you're doing for your kid, and ultimately make sure that the kid's happy, because if you do that, then it's a win-win situation for everyone. And you know, one of our success stories, we talk about it next, is a Dean Mitty kid that went to Ohio State and arguably might go down as like one of the best players, top three ever at Ohio State, because he's a four-time All-American.
This Ryan Tarafinko?
Yeah. So four-time, he's probably going to be maybe the first five-time All-American when it's all said and done. And he was a late commit to Ohio State. And everyone was like, hey, he's not quick enough. He doesn't have a burst. He doesn't do this. And this is when he was trying to get recruited, like his sophomore year. And I was like, you don't understand. This kid drives an hour and 10 minutes to play for us each way, twice a week to play club lacrosse. And he's the hardest working kid. And I'm telling you, like, he's going to do this. And I remember Ohio State was like, okay, yeah, we'll take him. And I go, look, I will not let you down. He'll be at least a two-time captain for you. And now he's going to be probably a three-time captain, a five-time All-American. And the thing which like really kind of culminates your career as a coach, and you don't get to coach, like, he's a golden child. Like, you don't get to coach the kids that have his attitude and work ethic every day. As you know, as a coach, you know, there's just different kids, and there's those kids that you're like, man, once they leave your program, you're like, I may never see a kid like that again. And when he left us, we're like, man, we probably won't ever see a Ryan Tarafinko. But what makes it all worthwhile is a quick story. I remember waking up one morning down the shore right before he was about to go to Ohio State, and he sent me an email. And it was like 7:30 in the morning. And dude, by the time I got through it, I was in tears of just like him thanking me and saying like the impact I've had in his career and can't wait to start his next chapter. And like, he won't let me down and stuff. And dude, I was a grown ass man at that point in time. And to see that and the impact that you can have on kids' lives and their family, like, that's the best.
That's why we do it. That's why Eric and I are friends now. You know, we are able to, you know, walk his kid through that process, and it's great when they end up that way. You know what I mean? It's and he's coming back, right? So you got to see it for one final year at Ohio State.
Final year, man. And it's funny. I know you guys had Tillman on the show the other day.
Yeah.
And I can remember, talk about a guy that recruits his ass off. It was our summer invitational, which was one of the last tournaments of the summer. It was a consolation game that we had, and he had a Maryland commit on our team. And literally, this was back in the day where you played two games on Sunday. Like, even if you lost, you had a consolation game.
Yeah.
So it really didn't mean anything. And I just remember looking at my phone halfway through the thing. Like, it buzzed, and I looked up, and it was Tillman. I'm like, what does Tillman want? So I look at it, and he says, where's blah, blah, like his recruit. And he wasn't playing. He wasn't there that entire Sunday, and he wasn't there before. Didn't tell me where it was, where he was going, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, dude, there's a reason why that Tills is like the best. And, you know, why Maryland goes back to national championship after national championship, because this guy recruits his ass off at consolation games on a Sunday in Philadelphia, asking, you know, trying to find his recruit. Was he
pissed that he wasn't there?
I'm sure he was.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, I don't know. And I like, he didn't even call me afterwards to kind of ask, prod me about where he was, even though I
did he end up there?
What's up?
Did he end up in Maryland?
Yeah, he did.
He did. He did. Nice.
Didn't end up finishing his career there, but he ended up in Maryland.
Right. So. He started there.
That's a whole other podcast, man.
Back to the original point. You know, Dane, and Eric, that's, I mean, it's what you guys said, your relationship. Like, that's why you coach, man. You coach to change people's lives, and it's not about the money or anything like that. And if you can give back, and I think for me, it's, I didn't have that person. We talked about my dad previously in the podcast, and he didn't know anyone in the lacrosse world, but tried to put me in the best position. And I'm trying to give people an opportunity, which I didn't have. And if I can be a vehicle through that, through my connections in the lacrosse world, to help to get
to everything,
he should be. Yeah. That means a lot. But also too, I'm not going to send a kid to Maryland if he's you know, a mid D3 player.
Right.
And I think like my word is just as valuable too. So it's a great sport, and just the people that you get to meet are awesome as well. That's where you get to be fortunate.
Well, listen, it's been awesome having you on. We'll have to do it again sometime. Dane, I think we got it all in, didn't we? Did we touch everything? We covered everything.
Brett's the man. Brett is the absolute man. So I was looking forward to this one.
Yeah, Dane,
don't make me blush, my man. Don't worry.
It's just audio.
You just want more Nike gear. That's it. You want more than Nike gear. I get it.
I'm just glad.
My NXT hats are I got a couple of them, but
I'm just glad he kept his shirt on, because I saw that dude walking around. Oh my God, that showcase at Baltimore a couple of years ago.
Like, Eric's who is married, that? But when he first met you, machine? He looked at me and he said, "Who the hell is that guy?" You're wearing tight ass pants too. You had these like black pants
Might
on.
Might have been a small shirt.
Like Fabio, like walking to the field. And I'm like,
yeah, he had the long hair going.
I'm like, this guy, he's nerd. He's fine. He's not that good at lacrosse.
This past year, you know, Phipps has worked at Brian Phipps, who's the head coach of Spalding. We were teammates with the Bayhawks. And it was funny, this past summer at the showcase, he goes, "Man, is it me? Or every time that we have this showcase, your pants get a little tighter." And you're like, "I'm trying not to, man, but like, it's comfortable."
I believe it.
Gives it to me, it's comfortable.
All right. So, Brett, if people want to follow you on Twitter, it's BManny13. Is that accurate?
At BManny13.
Yep. At BManny13.
What's NXT Sports? Do they have one?
Yeah, I mean, our the brand, which like what we were talking about, Showcase Lacrosse. So at Showcase Lacrosse, and then there's a bunch of different ones under NXT, like NXT LC Boys, NXT Lacrosse. But the main one I kind of focus on and evolve around is Showcase Lacrosse.
All right, perfect. So make sure you give that a follow. Give Dane a follow on Twitter and Instagram. It's Coach Dane Smith. I'm EB Junkie. Spread the word for us. Brett, you're the man. Thank you so much. For Dane, I'm Eric. We will see you next time. Be safe, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.